Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good morning. It's Blaise Olson. I'm in for Rashini today, joined by Dr. David Hilden on Healthy Matters. And I hear Dr. David Hilden all the time, so I'm looking forward to this next hour, especially the topic at hand here. Dr. Hilden, welcome to your early Sunday morning.
Good morning, Blaise. Glad to have you with us. I do get to listen to you all the time. Mm-hmm. I do a short segment with Dave Lee about an hour after you, and so yep. You're often the first voice I hear in the morning when I wake up. So it's good to hear you on a Sunday morning when you are probably wishing you could be sleeping in a little bit.
Well, that's okay. As Devin and I were talking, these early mornings were started when I was young, and you just mentioned you had a paper out when you were young too, and the idea that we let 11, 12-year-olds wander around at 4, 5 in the morning when we were younger. I also think it would have solved a lot of issues, but I haven't been able to change my wiring some 35 years later.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I was listening to the two of you talk, and I remember getting up at like 4 in the morning. It's like 5 below zero in South yep. Minneapolis. I'm 12 years old. I go and I pick up the newspapers, and invariably there weren't quite enough newspapers for all the 12-year-olds, so some kid was short 5 or 6 papers. I don't know why that was. You know, the whole thing, so you had to call the paper. Oh, we were 12. Yeah, but it built character, that's what I say.
It really does. There's a work ethic there. And then the other thing one of our texters said was that, you know, we also had to collect the money, which gave me yep. an early lesson in business, let's just say. Asking people for money at 12 years old for their service was...
And you used to peel off those little sticker things yep. out of your... You'd just watch it there and you'd go, collect. And you'd, yep. you'd get like $2.
Exactly. I got a letter in the papers yesterday and today from my weekend carrier. Happy holidays. And those are people I always make sure I tip around this time of the year because I appreciate it. I still get 3 or 4 newspapers every day at my house. So there you go.
I'll bet you do. I get 2. I get, you know, I get the Star Tribune 7 days a week, and then I get the Times on the weekends. And I do also, you know, the folks who do that, who provide services that you never really meet or you see, and, you know,
right.
it's a good idea to remember them. Good
yes.
idea to remember them. I like For that. Sure. I like that at this time of year as well.
Well, we have a great show here. You have, and so timely. I think as we're in this surge on the pandemic, and we're all thinking about what we can do or thinking about frontline workers, you have somebody who's really, truly right there, probably under more pressure and under more stress than both the department or the system was really designed for. And so I'll let you introduce our guest.
Thanks a lot, Blaise. I have John Galligan. Now, John is a respiratory therapist and has been, I'll ask him this, but for some decades, I'm pretty sure, he is the manager of the respiratory care department at Hennepin Healthcare, the hospital that you many of you know as HCMC in downtown Minneapolis, where I work. John, it's good to have you on the show today.
Yeah, I this is, what, the second time I've been on? I feel like an honored guest here.
I know you're a pro, John. You're now a radio veteran once you've been on twice.
Well, my dad always said I had a face for radio.
Yeah, that's exactly right. John, you are a respiratory therapist. Not only that, you run the department. I'm going to give just a brief story, and then I want you to comment about how respiratory care is handling this pandemic. So yesterday, I was at the hospital. I had two situations. One, a patient unfortunately died of COVID after about 2 hours after I was talking to him over breakfast. He died 2 hours later because that's how COVID works. And then a few hours later, I was with another patient who did not have COVID but had a bad cancer and was struggling to breathe. And I called the respiratory therapist, one of your people, who showed up about 3 minutes later. And about 4 minutes later, that patient was doing wonderfully breathing due to the treatments the respiratory therapist provided. So you guys are so critical to not only this pandemic but to regular patient care for patients who don't have COVID. Could you describe for our listeners what your department is seeing during this pandemic? How are you guys all holding up, and what kind of services are you having to provide?
You know what we see. I think on the front end of this, when we were first seeing it in the spring, we were kind of following what a lot of other institutions had done, in particular out east. We were doing a lot of ventilator work. We weren't really waiting, kind of riding it out. And that was why you saw such a huge push earlier in the year or in the spring about ventilators, ventilators, ventilators. But as it kind of slowed a little bit or ebbed here in the summer, then we were kind of like, you know, we really probably could optimize better with our high flows and in particular using a BiPAP machine for non-invasive ventilation. So we were thinking that, well, maybe we can do more on that pre side of being on a ventilator. So on this fall here, then on this second hump of this COVID camel, we're seeing a lot more oxygen therapy and high flows and using the BiPAPs as non-invasive, and also really, really taking more advantage of that, what we call a wake proning, where we've got people who are not in the ICU but are exhibiting this low level of oxygen, and then allowing them to be laying on their front as opposed to their back, and then letting the lungs kind of use a larger portion of their system to allow for better oxygenation. So we're not seeing right now as many vented patients with COVID as we did earlier in the spring, which is good. That's good to see that we're not overwhelming our ICUs with vented COVID patients, but we're keeping them on the floors a little bit longer and working with them there, so that we're just moving that strain from the ICU to the floors.
That's what people, I think, maybe that point is sometimes lost. We still have all these cases. We still have death rates that are rising. It's actually an awful time for COVID listeners. I just have to be honest. It's a horrible time. But one of the things that we did, what you did, listeners, what everybody did by flattening the curve last spring, is that it allowed people like John and the experts in respiratory care to figure out the best ways to treat patients, so we didn't run out of ventilators, because we realized there were ways to do it without the ventilator before they needed the ventilator. That's just a great example of that's what we all learned as a hospital system over these last several months. We're probably going to have to take a break very soon. We're going to take your texts and calls. I'm talking to John Galligan, the manager of respiratory therapy at Hennepin Healthcare.
Welcome back to Healthy Matters. I'm Blois Olson, in for Rashini today, joined with Dr. David Hilden here from Hennepin Healthcare. We have with us John Gallagher, a respiratory therapist. Dr. Hilden, why don't you go a little deeper into this very, very high-pressure situation we're dealing in with this latest surge?
Thanks a lot, Blois. So we are talking to John Galligan from the respiratory therapy department. John, could you, and we have some callers on the line, we're going to get to them real shortly, but John, could you just describe for our listeners what you see in a typical patient with COVID-19? People often ask me this question. It's like, well, what does it look like? It's no big deal. it's just not a big deal. You know, it's a cold. It's like the flu. Well, a lot of people are living in their homes with COVID, and indeed, for many people, thankfully, it is a mild illness. But for so many people, so many, way more than everybody might realize, it's an exceptionally serious illness. And it is, I would liken it to, imagine basically suffocating. You just can't breathe anymore. And think of what that might feel like. So if you could describe for our listeners, what do you see when you get a patient who's not doing well with COVID? Their oxygen levels might be quite low. How do you care for them?
The patients that we wind up seeing, you know, that get sick enough to get admitted into the hospital, it is that low that low oxygen level. That's what we see, as opposed to someone who might have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or COPD or emphysema, where their oxygen might be okay, but it's their CO2, their carbon dioxide, that tends to be very high, and you have that respiratory failure from the high carbon dioxide levels. But what we're seeing in these folks is that the lung mechanics and their CO2 is actually good. It's that low oxygen level that's what's affecting them, and they may come in okay, and it's just like, hey, I feel short of breath, I got this cough, I'm kind of tired, and you know, I just don't feel right. And you check their oxygen on with a oximeter on their finger, and they're sitting at 74%, which is 74% of their hemoglobin has oxygen on it, whereas normal is 98%. And we're seeing these huge drops on these people, and it's quite alarming when we see that. And but it's even more alarming to have somebody who's lucid and carrying on a conversation with you. So that's been the big, like, moment for us is seeing that very low oxygen level.
Yeah, I was mentioning that just in passing earlier. I'm working in the hospital this week caring for many, many patients with COVID. And just this a couple days ago, I'm literally speaking to a man with COVID-19. And he was eating his scrambled eggs, and in between bites, he was chatting with me. And, you know, I've got the big gear on. I've got the gown, the mask, the face shield. I've got the whole nine yards. And he's chatting with me, and he was talking about his life. I was getting to know him just a little bit, and he even joked a little bit. He smiled a little bit. And I'm looking on the monitor on the wall, and it said his oxygen saturations were 72%. And it's like, I've been practicing medicine for 20 years, and I've never seen that. If your oxygen levels are 72%, you're in trouble. You are not doing well, and you know it, and you're not having a nice conversation with your doctor. It's one of these things like I have to say, okay, sir, I'm going to have to, you know, we're going to have to do something here. Your oxygen levels aren't compatible with living. And sadly, that man that I was having a very kind, normal, cordial conversation with did indeed die. And not long later, 2 or 3 hours later. So it is just this weird, weird illness that is just baffling us, and we're starting to learn a lot more about it. But it is the kind of thing that I just want people to know. I know it's a mild illness for you or your loved ones that you know in the community, but if you are one of those folks who ends up in the hospital, you can go from having breakfast and a conversation to unfortunately not surviving in just a matter of hours. And that's what we're talking about today. We've got John Galligan. He's the manager of respiratory care at Hennepin. Boyce, I think we might have some callers on the line with some questions.
We do. Let's go to Frank in St. Paul. Frank?
Hi, good morning. See, I've got a couple quick questions here. One is, I've been tested twice this year, and both were negative, and I'm wondering how accurate these nasal swabs are. And secondly, if one had COVID and then recovered from it, will the vaccine be necessary? And also, just a comment, I've just read recently that they found in the blood antibodies back in 2019. And I'm just wondering about that section. Thanks.
Right. Thanks, Frank. I'll try to handle those. The first one, first of all, the antibodies, it is possible that some people were getting this in very late 2019 and we just didn't know it. That's when it arrived on planet Earth, if you will, in late 2019. So it is possible, although we're not real sure about that part. As for the vaccine, if you already had it, yes, you'll probably still need it. We don't know the duration of safety after you get COVID? We don't know. We don't even know if you're immune at all, but you probably are. You probably are relatively immune for a period of time. It might be a few months. We're hopeful it's a lot longer. We don't know if it's lifetime protection. Probably not. So those questions, we just don't know yet. So I would recommend in the strongest possible terms that you do indeed get your COVID vaccine. And like I was saying to Paul Douglas earlier in the week on the air, the vaccine is coming in a matter of weeks to Minnesota. It's going to be 3 to 9 months before everybody gets it, but it's going to be coming out. The first shots in the arms will be in the next couple of weeks. And then the last part, are those nasal swabs accurate? The answer to that is yes. They're not perfect. Nothing's perfect. They can be wrong, but they're highly accurate. They're about the most accurate thing we would have. So I would generally, you can believe them. But when you have a negative one, if you have symptoms, it is still possible that you have this thing. It is still possible to have it even with a negative test.
Thanks, Dr. Hilden. Now let's go to Ken and Blaine. Ken?
Good morning. I was reading in the Minneapolis paper yesterday about this antibody study, and it appears that Hennepin Healthcare is involved in the antibody treatment and also United Health is involved in that. And I have more interest in how do you sign up for that study. I'm going to be 75 next month. And could you talk a little bit more about that antibody treatment and antibody study?
Yeah, thanks. The antibody treatment is what's called a monoclonal antibody. People might remember it as very similar to what Donald Trump got when he was at Walter Reed. It is thought in the scientific community that if you have antibodies, in other words, your body has been exposed to the virus and you've got antibodies, that perhaps that would be helpful to give your antibodies to somebody else. It didn't pan out initially, but there is some suggestion that if you manipulate those antibodies a little bit, concentrate them down, and get the ones that are specific to COVID-19, that it might be helpful. It's not going to be a game changer. It's going to maybe help a few people, maybe 5 or 10% of the people. Don't quote me on that, but it might help some people with very early disease to prevent it from getting to the point when you're in the hospital. The study that we're doing at Hennepin is on a medication that we lovingly refer to as BAM, B-A-M, because its actual name is BAM, I can't even say it, Bamlanivimab. It's got like 5 syllables, Bamlanivimab, and so BAM for short. And we are doing studies about, it's more or less you can get it if you have early disease and you're not in the hospital. So you can go to hennepinhealthcare.org for a lot more information about that. That's at hennepinhealthcare.org.
Dr. Hilden, I think that antibody, both that and just knowing post symptoms, if you've had it, I had a really bad cold after the election. I know you're shocked. And it lingered for longer than a normal cold, but I didn't have any COVID symptoms. And so once that cold cleared, I went and got an antibody test to say that I didn't have COVID, just for a little peace of mind as we went into Thanksgiving. And I think everybody's trying to figure out their best kind of entry point into their own, you know, they don't want to overwhelm testing if there's no real COVID symptoms, but there's that peace of mind to, you know, to kind of move on. And I know not just the vaccine, but we're going to have a show next Sunday at noon with a ton of therapies, both for these long haulers that we're getting. So it's, I know everybody's very focused on the vaccine, but there's many, many treatments, therapies that are coming to deal with people who, you know, have survived COVID and may have some lingering issues as well, right?
Exactly. The long haulers is one of the stories we should be talking about more. Everyone says, well, I didn't die, but I'm fine. I got it and it got better. There are people with symptoms that just do not seem to go away. This disease ravages your brain, your heart, your liver, your intestines, and certainly your lungs. And so people have symptoms for weeks and weeks, and people have symptoms, some of them, for months. Young athletes are getting heart disease from this. And so those are the questions that we're going to have to talk about going forward in the coming months. And we're also going to have to talk about what you just said, Blaise, that the treatments that are going to be available to people.
You're listening to Healthy Matters here on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Blaise Olson, joined by Dr. David Hilden and our guest, this week is Dr. John Galligan. He's a respiratory therapist at Hempen Healthcare. We'll take a break, and when we come back, your calls at 651-989-9226 or send us your text questions. WCCO News Talk 830, Blois Olson in for Rashini today. Here talking to Dr. David Hilden and John Galligan about COVID, what it's like at HCMC, how we are dealing with this for respiratory therapists. And I was talking earlier just about the pressure on one particular department that there must be on respiratory therapy, and I want to get more into that as we go. But we have a couple questions, one on text that we've gotten a couple times. Dr. Hilden, can you talk about the two or three different vaccines and maybe how they're different or what we know about the differences in them?
Sure, I can give it a try. The first one that's going to be sent out to Minnesota hospitals is the one made by BioNTech, a company in Germany, and distributed by Pfizer. And it's an interesting global story. A married couple from Turkey designed this thing based on what they had done in cancer therapy. It uses the DNA to trick your body into thinking it has COVID-19, and so your body develops an immune response. So it's a global story that a Turkish couple living in Germany and manufactured in Belgium for an American company developed a vaccine. So it is amazing. That's the Pfizer one. It is thought to be very effective in developing resistance to the virus. So and it has found to be relatively safe. People do feel a little bit of punkiness when you get the vaccine. You're a little bit of achiness and you don't feel quite right for a day or two, and that is a good thing. We're trying to let people know when you get the vaccine, don't worry if you get a little bit of not feeling well for a day or two. That means your body is responding as it should. So the other one's made by Moderna. I'm not as familiar with how that one works, but that one's going to come out a week or two later. And then the third one by AstraZeneca out of Oxford, that one's going to come out, I don't know when. That'll be the third one out. All of them have been shown to be effective. All of them have been shown to you develop some immunity, but we don't know how long the immunity lasts in any of them. So that's the unknown. But they have been shown to be safe. They were developed quickly, but they were shown to be safe. And so in the short term, in other words, nobody had huge major problems with them. So we'll begin. Hospitals had to buy deep freezers. At Hennepin, we had to buy a deep freezer to hold the vaccine because it has to be kept at extremely low temperatures. So we're ready for it when it arrives next week. The first two vaccines that come out will both require two doses about 3 or 4 weeks apart.
Sounds great. Thanks, Dr. Hilden. Let's go to Pat in Maple Grove. Pat?
Hello?
Hi, Pat. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I'm glad that you have someone on who's a respiratory therapist, because we hear so much about doctors and nurses, but I think we need to pay attention a little bit more to paramedics and respiratory therapists. But my question is, I have AFib, so I have issues with shortness of breath anyway, and so I'm wondering in what way that might be different if you thought you were having some symptoms of COVID, and what you could do in the interim between calling 911, and what can you do for yourself before you get to the hospital? And then also, what is the technical aspect of what is done by the respiratory people in the hospital when you lie them on their, how do you determine if you're going to lie them on their stomach? If you lie them prone, then do you have to use like a special pad so that there's more room at the chest area, like a sponge with a hole at the chest area? How does that all work?
Yeah, Pat, thank you for your call. I would echo your initial comment. We often hear about the doctors and nurses, and they are important. I always say the nurses are the heart and soul of medicine, and they are the true heroes. It's nurses. But in every single patient with COVID has a respiratory therapist going in there, gowning up, putting on the equipment, putting their own safety in some risk, and they're caring for all of the sickest patients. So I would second that, as well as paramedics. But in the hospital, our respiratory care team. So I'm going to turn it to you, John Galligan. First of all, tell us how your team is holding up. I mean, personally, how are they holding up? And then secondly, can you answer Pat's questions about how proning works and what do you do with somebody who's getting short of breath?
Sure. How the team is holding up, they're beat. They are really, really exhausted. I to this day, I don't know why Hennepin Health ever thought that I was a good fit for being manager, but I tell you, every day that I walk in there and seeing those people come in every day and get ready to do what they do every day, every shift, it makes me really, really proud of working with that group of people. We're really, really a tight family, and you know, that's the main thing that's really holding people together, is being there for each other and leaning on each other. So it's a great group of people. It really is. And when you talk about, you know, back into saying about, you know, trying to acknowledge, you know, the people that don't always get that acknowledgement. The people that I think of too are environmental service people, dietary people. They are right there with us in the hospital, making sure that the rooms are cleaned, that the trash is taken out, that the bathrooms get cleaned out, making sure that people get their food. They feed us as well. And there's also the people that bring us our supplies, that so that we can actually take care of people. It's a huge group of people inside of that building that show up every day, gear up, and do all of that stuff. So there is a long, long line of people that deserve a hearty slap on the back.
I would concur with that. There are, you know, for many people, this pandemic hasn't meant easier, or I don't want to say easier. They haven't been staying home. They're going into work and working harder. And the environmental service workers, that is what many people would know of as housekeeping. They're called environmental service workers. I'm telling you, they are there each and every day. And they're going into, you know, there's 50, 60, 70 patients with COVID in our hospital alone. And they are going into those rooms. They're gowning up. They're masking up. They've got all the gear on. They got head booties, and they have booties on. The whole thing. And they're cleaning those rooms, and they're doing it cheerfully. I have one environmental service worker. I see her every day on this one unit, and she is so cheerful. I can't even believe it. She's just so cheerful. And then she goes into patients' rooms with COVID and does her thing. Thank you for bringing up all of the workers who are in hospitals, John. Now, back to Pat's question. When someone already has a respiratory illness, how do they know that this is, you know, what's different about COVID? And then if they do go to the hospital, when you say you put people on their tummy, proning them, prone as opposed to supine, how does that work?
Sure. So the shortness of breath, I guess I'm a big believer in keeping things simple. If this feels different, then call it out. This is not my normal shortness of breath that I might have with my atrial fib or with whatever chronic condition I have. If it's different, call it out. Call and get the help. Whether it's just reaching out to your primary, or if it's, you know, calling 911, call it out. If it's different, it's different. Then it is what it is. Just don't fake it. Don't try to tough it out. Really, this does not feel right. This feels different, and I need some extra help. Talking about proning, so what I was alluding to earlier was the awake proning. So then the people that aren't in the intensive care unit that we have down in the general medical areas, if we can get them to roll over on their stomach, for those people, it's not, when you talk about padding, that's really not an issue for those folks, because that person can move like you would in the middle of the night when you're sleeping. You move around because you get uncomfortable, you start to feel a little bit of uncomfortableness, and then you move yourself. So as those people are aware, then they can move and kind of adjust themselves so they're not on what we call those pressure points, where you don't have as much padding between like a bony surface and your skin. But in the ICU, when you're on a ventilator, we're the ones that have to take care of that for you. So literally, we came up, I'm gonna just say that us at HCMC, we came up with this, and we're just the smartest thing ever because we did it. And I'm joking a little bit with that. But we have a proning kit that we use. So everything in there is what we need to help protect a patient once we have to roll them over onto their tummies. And it is a lot of padding that we'll put on those pressure points to protect their skin surfaces. People forget about the skin. Your skin is your biggest organ, and you really have to take care of that. It really does help keep all of your stuff inside of you and stuff outside of you. And you really do forget about that stuff. But we have a proning kit that actually has that padding in there, and we know exactly the spots where we need to put it on. We'll actually have to turn somebody's head every 2 hours when they're on a ventilator and we're proning them just to make sure that we're offloading that pressure. It really is a task, and it takes a lot of people to really monitor somebody on their that's being proned on a ventilator. And you know, God love the people that I work with because they make it look really, really easy.
That's great. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Healthy Matters with Dr. David Hilden and Hennepin Healthcare. When we come back, we'll wrap up your calls and your text questions. Blaise Olson in for Rashini. Welcome back to Healthy Matters with Dr. David Hilden. I'm Blaise Olson in for Rashini. We have a couple calls to get through here quick and a few text questions. So let's go to Roger in Blaine. Roger?
Yes, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have three short questions. I'm 76 years old. I've survived prostate cancer. I'm cancer-free. But 50 years ago, I had what was called Guillain-Barré or French polio. I'd just like to know whether or not would be okay for me to get that one of those vaccines.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. Guillain-Barré syndrome is a neuropathy that happened after not commonly, but not it does happen every now and then after flu shots. I can't answer that with any authority, and I'm sorry that's a kind of a halfway answer because the vaccine is so new, we haven't yet given it to lots of people. I don't know the risk about Guillain-Barré syndrome, but you are the second person to ask me that in the last 48 hours. I had somebody in the hospital ask that, so I'm going to have to look into that a little bit more. My suggestion is just make sure that you tell your doctor, whoever's giving you the vaccine, about it. My tendency is to say that that I would get the vaccine. I would. But I don't want to say that with any authority, Roger, because we just don't know yet. And so you might be one. Hopefully we'll know more in the next month or two after Pfizer and the other companies give us more information. Did they see any Guillain-Barré syndrome or didn't they? And so stay tuned for more on that.
And then Larry in Cambridge, your question?
Good morning, you guys. First of all, thank you for being here this morning, and thank you for all you do, and I want to thank your families for enduring all that they do. My question is, and I know this might be a bit sensitive, but I think it needs to be asked, what is your visceral response to people that you see in public spaces that kind of have their chest puffed out and they're not wearing masks?
Well, Larry, that is a good one. I'll tell you, I'm furious. That's what it is. I'm furious. Most of my healthcare worker friends and colleagues have been working 60, 70, 80 hour a week. They've not seen their families much. Everything we're seeing now was mostly preventable. This was a failure of our country over the last few months. That's an opinion, everybody. That's an opinion. But we are going into, it is a colossal lack of planning on a national level. And so, you know, and this was preventable. Not all of it was preventable. We didn't invent this virus. We didn't bring it here all by ourselves. But our response to it was mostly preventable. That is what most of my healthcare colleagues are thinking right now. And when we see people out there not obeying or not following basic common sense, when we think about what people did during World War II in the name of sacrifice and what people have done before, all we're asking is that you stay home and wear a mask. That's all we're asking. And so that makes us a little bit, it gets hard. And then we see you and then we have to sign your death certificate. So that's a real challenge. And again, that is, you asked a provocative question. That's my provocative answer. I try to keep it to the scientific facts, but that's pretty much what everybody I know is thinking. It's like, please, people, help us out here. Help out your communities. You don't do these mitigation efforts for yourself. You're doing it for our country. And so that's what we're all hoping people learn.
Dr. Hilden, as we wrap up here in the next 30 seconds or so, one quick question we had was, is the dentist safe? And my research has shown that largely going to the dentist is safe right now.
Yeah, they're doing their best they can to keep you safe, and dental care is so important. So I would suggest that you go to your dentist for your care. That is not something we can put off much longer. And so, hey, thanks to John Galligan. John, we have to go. I appreciate you being on the show, and thank you for everything respiratory therapists are doing.
Open lines next Sunday for all your questions. Blois Olson in for Rashini. We'll be back soon.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.